With the recent passing of Sacramento's Measure U, what changes can be made to build the city's economy through the influence and actions of all participants in society? Pat Fong-Kushida, CEO of the Sacramento Asian Pacific Chamber, joins us in partnership with the American Leadership Forum to talk about the opportunity. Next on Studio Sacramento.
At Five Star Bank, we create thoughtful solutions to help the capital region thrive, from economic development and education to public health and safety, issues that are vitally important to Sacramento's prosperity. We're proud to be part of the conversation and hope you'll join in.
Pat, what does inclusive economics mean to you?
Inclusive economic development means that we create intentional pathways so that all communities, all citizens can participate in the economy. I think right now in Sacramento, we have a tale of two cities. And in order for us to make sure that we have growth opportunity and that we have sustainable growth opportunity, inclusive economic development really needs to be at the forefront of everybody's discussion.
Some might say in a majority-minority state, I know that that's a term that's overused and actually kind of out of date at this point. What do we need with inclusive economic development? Shouldn't it just be based on demographics, especially in the city of Sacramento?
I think it's a question of access, Scott. I think that when we have marginalized communities and when we take a look, particularly within the Sacramento region and within the city of Sacramento, there is a majority now. And access for that majority is difficult. And so if we...
What do you mean access?
Access to opportunities, access to workforce, opportunities, access to affordability, access to transportation, access to a lot of things that many of us take for granted. I think there has to be more of an intentional strategy around how we are conscious about delivering access to these communities.
And is access the problem that you're trying to solve, or does it go bigger than that?
I think access is the start. Access begins the conversation. So let me give you an example. Brookings Institute came out a couple years ago around this notion that economic development organizations need to be more thoughtful. In the old days, it was mainly about business attraction, business expansion, business retention. And they started to talk about inclusive economic development because they started to see real inequality starting to occur in a large part in many middle-class neighborhoods in many cities around the country. And so Brookings really started to have these conversations, and they looked at San Diego, they looked at Indianapolis, and they looked at Nashville as beta tests, if you will, around what could be done if they were more intentional around creating these pathways. And they were successful in that.
What exactly is a pathway?
Pathway is creating those linkages that communities can then participate, whether that linkage is around workforce, whether that linkage is around supply chain for small business, whether that linkage is around educational attainment. What are those linkages and what are those strategies in these communities that are going to help lift those communities to add to the economic growth and vitality of the region?
Give us a blue sky example as to how these pathways and linkages would work in an ideal situation.
In an ideal situation, we would bring a lot of the economic activity back into our communities. In an ideal situation, our anchor institutions, as an example, would have thoughtful strategies around supplier diversity. I think, and if we can do a couple of those things well, it gives us the opportunity to take lessons learned from that to apply to other areas.
Measure U was passed in order to address this issue in part. What's on the horizon for what's next now that that particular initiative has been enacted into law?
Measure U is a gift. Measure U is a gift for our communities, particularly communities of color, because before we had not many tools in our toolbox, and Measure U is about investment. I'd love to see our communities viewed as assets, not liabilities. And what Measure U said once passed was, yes, we are going to make investments in these assets. And if we do that, I think the return on that investment could be huge opportunities for this community.
And forgive me, but what exactly did Measure U, what exactly is it going to do?
So Measure U was an increase in sales tax by half a cent. And that money was really focused on building a strong base in economic development. And so what we had said when we supported Measure U was, if we are going to increase our sales tax, not by half a cent, but by 1 cent, half of the cent going to basic city services, fire, policing, all city services, and the other half cent were to go towards a fund to fund economic development opportunities, what would that look like and what would that be? And so we estimated that approximately about $40 million a year could be set aside for that very use. So that's really why we supported Measure U.
How do you respond to cynics who might say that whenever tax measures like this are passed, the first place it goes is for the city services that we're already paying for, police, fire, pensions, things like that. And if there is anything left over, it's going to go into the downtown, not into the neighborhoods that are most at risk or most challenged, where the recession never ended.
Mm-hmm. I think that how I respond to that is that we have real leadership at the helm that not only has made the commitment, but has the care to ensure that that happens. And I think that you have enough diverse voices around the table, including the usual suspects, to make sure that the investment that it was intended to go to actually does occur. So I'm really actually pretty excited about the opportunity to work across communities to be able to see where that investment gets made.
So it's in this day and age, mm-hmm. what is it specifically, in addition to the dollars, are the policies that have been enacted or are in place today that leads to the need for inclusive economic programs?
I don't think that we, policymakers, approach this more as subsidy issues. So when we take a look at how historically our communities, underserved communities, have been treated in the past with respect to economic development, it really is an approach around social service. And I think that this approach is vastly different, because what it does is it says to our communities, you're responsible for your future. You tell us what you need. You tell us where those investments need to occur. So it's not a hand out, it's a hand up. So I think that this is, I think that inclusive economic development is really about connecting those communities that have largely been disenfranchised, providing access and pathways for those folks to be able to participate in next economy industry clusters, or whatever that looks like for our region, and then providing the type of investment that's going to be needed in order to be able to have people take advantage of those.
But in those underserved neighborhoods, along with the economic development, mm-hmm. the jobs, the business support, things like that, aren't the social services like required as a prerequisite for people being able to actually move into those jobs?
So I'm going to give you an example of how policy could change. So, you know, we've been involved in workforce training for many years, and I just spoke to a gentleman today that talked about the fact that there was a gentleman who was formerly incarcerated and decided that he was going to change his life around. What he did was, is to his credit, he went to school, did everything that he needed to do, okay? He wanted to get into the medical field. So when the time came for him to apply to UC Davis and for him to check that box that said, have you ever been guilty of a crime or committed a crime? And he had to check the box. He didn't get the job. So the point that I'm making to that is that if in fact policies are enacted and we can't do anything about those particular policies, what if that same young man, he couldn't get a job at UC Davis, but what if he was able to work in one of the supply chains for UC Davis, a startup, an entrepreneur company that was supplying part of the supply chain to UC Davis? That's a game changer, right? So if UC Davis's policy around supplier diversity, as an example, said, we are going to be intentional about hiring local, we are going to be intentional about hiring local small businesses, we could get this gentleman a job. But right now...
So how much of this, in terms of this initiative, is going to be entrepreneurship, and how much is it going to be other things like workforce training and education and things that are more along the lines of being preparatory?
I think that what we have to do a better job of is coming together as a community, because Measure U now has many parents, and everybody...
Successful things usually do.
They do, right? So now everybody says, this is my child. So what we have to try and do is figure out a better strategy, and that really is what it forces us to do, is to work across the table with folks that we haven't normally worked across the table from. So,
such as?
Affordable housing advocates, homelessness, the educational community, right? We're small business. You know, our focus has been building capacity for small businesses, minority-owned businesses, Asian-owned businesses. But it forces us to think a little bit differently about how to get some of this work done, because I think that, you know, there's only going to be a limited amount of money to go around, so that investment needs to be placed wisely. And so what we're working on is an inclusive economic collaborative approach, where we have a number of chambers and a number of PBIDs on these urban corridors.
PBID? What's that?
Business Improvement Districts. That basically what we are doing is working together, which we've never done before, chambers of commerce, our regional chambers, and our business improvement districts have never really come together before. And we're doing that for the very first time to really get to some of the things that you referenced, which is what are going to be our top priorities? How are we going to approach this?
It does seem that the needs are so great. Mm-hmm. Everything from preparing workforce and providing educational opportunity, even dealing with released offenders, as you described in your example, to entrepreneurial support and things like that. Where do you start?
I think that you start with a basic understanding of what's a priority for the community. And from our perspective, certainly we have small business as our interest, but I do think that it's a basic premise of we can't be everything to everybody, we can't boil the ocean. Let's start on a pilot program. Let's do something and have some success, build trust, because trust is key in order to get this done, because many community-based organizations for years have been in these neighborhoods working very hard on a lot of these issues. And for the first time, they're seeing folks that haven't necessarily been there. So to work together to do some of this and start initially on maybe something small and to be able to build from there, I think is going to be crucial to building trust and then to get to scalability and to something larger.
Are these activities that are going to take place, are they being conceived as investments or as grants, where it is that the money is put out there, once it's exhausted, it's gone? Or is this something that is going to ramp up over time and have some sort of return on investment to it, mm-hmm. based on the outcomes?
I think a little bit of both, and let me say why. I think that our communities, particularly communities of color, are new to the investment game, are new to creating those kinds of returns on investments that that folks want to see.
What do you mean?
Well, we're used to applying for grants, and that return on investment in terms of a rate of return on the money given is new to us. When we apply for grants, what are our metrics? Is it the number of jobs we create? It's the amount of people that we get through particular programs? What are those metrics? If we are going to change the way we look at things, then it is going to require a little bit of finessing around how that occurs.
And would you say then that not just the community and constituencies that you represent, mm-hmm. that are going to have to evolve how it is that they use the money that they receive, mm-hmm. but how should the community look at whether or not the tax increase is being appropriately used from a return on investment standpoint?
Mm-hmm. I think that we had that conversation earlier today with a number of community-based organizations, and some of us are of the mindset that you're going to have to figure out how you do both. And because the immediate return on investment, if you're looking at strictly from an ROI, that's a long-term horizon. That's going to take a long time for that to occur. So I think that if you want immediate wins in order for the folks that supported Measure U to see progress, then you're going to have to sacrifice a little bit around what you expect off of that investment in order to be able to show to the community that you have some successes.
As the Sacramento Asian Pacific Chamber of Commerce looks at its activities, what will this inclusive economic development strategy allow you all to do for the constituencies you represent, mm-hmm. that either have gone slow or haven't been able to get off the ground yet? What are you most excited about?
I'm excited because we've been doing this work, Scott, for over 20 years, and we have been working in on issues of workforce. We've been working on issues of small business and building capacity for that. I'm excited because right now, at this particular moment in time, everybody is rowing in the same boat. Everybody understands that if we continue to have cities, in particular the city of Sacramento, two separate cities, and that gap continues to widen, real growth, economic growth, is not going to occur. And so I'm just very excited about the fact that everybody is now thinking about inclusive economic development from a framework that it makes sense for economic growth. That's the key.
Though, wouldn't another view be that as long as on the macro level there is economic growth, that the rising tide would lift all boats anyway, regardless of neighborhood or zip code?
We've been doing that strategy for years, Scott, and we're in the place that we are now. The trickle down doesn't work and hasn't. To a certain extent, at what level then do we start to have the real conversations about what communities need? And what communities need are not a handout. They need access. They need pathways. They need intentional strategies to connect them to the opportunities that many of us take for granted.
And at the very fundamental neighborhood level, when you're looking at young people that are not connected to a career path, when you're looking at people who maybe lost their jobs in the recession and never received any retraining. Where will they go to connect in? Is it, will it be organizations like yours? Is it the higher education system? How will people bolt up into this new strategy so that they can benefit from it as well?
And even further than that, Scott, I would say in this, we are now quickly becoming an economy that's global. Globalization is happening. Technology and innovation is occurring. So the way that we used to do things, we have to figure out not only a strategy around how we reach the communities that you just described, but we have to do it differently, right? And we have to do it quickly because it's happening now, right? The autonomous vehicle discussion, electric vehicle discussion, all of the things that are happening with drone activity, all of the new technologies that are occurring, robotics, all of those are happening now. And our communities are continue to get left behind even further, right? Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So we have to think of new ways of reaching these populations.
What's interesting is that while these disconnects are evident if you look at the literature mm-hmm. and the latest data, at the same time, there are many areas where it is that there are thriving microeconomies, mm-hmm. but it doesn't seem like the powers that be even know they exist. To give you an example, the economic vitality that the API community has created along Stockton Boulevard in South Sacramento over the past 15 to 20 years mm-hmm. is absolutely amazing. But when we're having discussions about communities like that or different communities in other parts of the state where it is that there are thriving business districts, where English might be the second most spoken language, mm-hmm. those economies are thriving, but they don't seem to be connected up mm-hmm. to the broader economic conversations. Mm-hmm. Why is it that historically leaders have missed that?
You know, it's interesting that you talk about that because what you talk about is a sense of place. If you take a look at cities that you want to visit, that you love to visit, it's about those neighborhoods. Block by block, it changes. You have Little Saigon, then you have Little Italy, then you have Chinatown. You have those experiences, and that's what makes up why Sacramento is so unique. It's diversity. And you're absolutely right. We have tremendous jewels and assets in those communities, and they're thriving because they've been intentional about creating that sense of place within those neighborhoods. But the question that you have is, how do we get beyond those neighborhoods? How do I, as a Vietnamese-owned business, get beyond Little Saigon? How do I do that? And so the bridges that we create, that we can cross over, those are the bridges that I think inclusive economic development really means and really speaks to.
Well, as an example, off of out toward Rancho Cordova, off of Micron, mm-hmm. there is a supermarket mm-hmm. that is predominantly Asian themed. Mm-hmm. And it's got Asian groceries, Hispanic groceries. It's got, you know, products from India and the Middle East, places mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And whenever I share that with people in the broader business community, 95% of the people who are in a place to make policy decisions or influence them mm-hmm. have never even heard of the place. And so I'm just wondering, how do we bring those experts who are running thriving businesses and enterprises
into the conversation?
Into the conversation.
Yeah. And when we were in the meeting today, you know, we had the Sacramento Visitors Bureau leader there. And, you know, we had that conversation about how we do a better job of telling the story, telling the narrative, because shame on us that we have such tremendous cultural gifts that we can't share them, that we don't know how to do that. And so I think it's incumbent upon many of our organizations, mine included, to be able to be more thoughtful on how we make those connections.
And we'll leave it there. And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syfax. See you next time, right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
At Five Star Bank, we create thoughtful solutions to help the Capital Region thrive, from economic development and education to public health and safety, issues that are vitally important to Sacramento's prosperity. We're proud to be part of the conversation and hope you'll join in.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.